Thanks, everybody, for coming out. Here at Messiah, we take popular culture seriously. We think that Christians need to practice a thoughtful engagement with film and with popular music. We hope that our desire to do that is evident in the films that we choose to bring to Messiah as an example. They're not always the blockbusters that everybody goes to see, but they are films made by people who take seriously their role as artists in society. We do the same thing with our concerts, and here today we have two songwriters who take what they do very seriously. We're glad that they've agreed to share a bit about their art and how they see their vocation fitting into the theme of the Poetry and Sustainability Symposium. Let me read a bit from the statement on the theme of the symposium. Wendell Berry declares that we will understand the world and preserve ourselves and our values in it only insofar as we have a language that is alert and responsive to it and careful of it. Participants in the Poetry and Sustainability Symposium will explore the many ways that poetic speech can play a unique part in sustaining and giving value to our understanding of and role in the world in which we live. Both Josh and John will be speaking briefly on this topic, and then we'll have some time for discussions and maybe hear a song. Please join me in welcoming John Francis and Josh Ritter.
It's a pleasure to be here. I want to say thanks to the English department as well. I graduated from Messiah College in 2000 and something. And it's a pleasure to come back, especially to come back and be up here sharing this time in this space with Josh Ritter. And you're in for a treat tonight, too. It's going to be a great concert. Here's a statement that I'd like to see if you agree or disagree or want to challenge it. But I'm not sure about Josh or anyone else for that matter, but I don't believe in eloquence for eloquence's sake or necessarily art for art's sake. I think art by nature is something that communicates, and it has an intention. Even if that intention is to make you feel something, anything, or to make you experience something beautiful. But I think deeper than that and more than that, the job of the poet and the songwriter is to empathize and to cause the world around them to feel empathy. And that's a really high calling, I think. I mean, I believe that's probably the deepest of human interaction. It's probably the deepest emotion that we're capable of, is to empathize with someone else. Thank you for listening. I'm going to pass the mic to Josh, and it's a pleasure to be here, and thanks for having us.
Howdy. My name is Josh Ritter. I'm from, I grew up in, I'm very happy to be here, first of all. Thank you. I'm a little nervous. I was raised in Northern Idaho. I went to school in Oberlin College in Ohio. I chose to go to that school because I wanted to be a neuroscientist, and they had a neuroscience program there. I've always been interested in the brain and why it makes me do the things I do, good and bad, you know. Nice to have somebody else to blame it on. So I went to Oberlin, and I studied there for 2 years. During that time, I discovered music and discovered songwriting. And it was just something I found that I picked up that I felt like I understood. And I jettisoned the neuroscience, and I moved on to study folk music and study American history through folk music. So I went to Scotland, and I went to the largest folklore archive in the world, which is, you know, 50,000 hours of recorded folk songs and the beginnings of folk song collection. And I was there for about 9 months, and then came back and graduated from Oberlin, and then I went and started playing music in Boston. I mean, it's kind of a long process, but what I would like to say is that I kind of found what I loved, and I started doing it without any real idea of how I was going to make it work. And I'm still doing that. You know, so talking about sustainability is something I've been thinking about a lot about since I read the idea for this. I think that sustainability is beautifully open-ended. There's so many things that I could say about it, but really when one of the things I learned about in music, in my own personal experience, and from reading the stories and listening to these recordings of all these people going back, songs go back 1,000 years, is that everybody needs to eat. That seems to be the case. we have a very streamlined and incredible information superstructure now, where we can like download songs onto our phones. The money goes somewhere. Somebody might make a few cents, you know, when you listen to their song. There's stuff like that. But if you were a troubadour in 15th century France, what you were really interested in was getting something to eat. That is the one thing that I think can combine all of us who do anything that we love, is we do what we love, and then we figure out how we're going to make it work for us to eat food and live life. I have a lot of friends who were musicians for a while and then gradually went off and did other things because they found that was the way to make a living. And there's a really hard moment a few years into trying to make a career work when you're temp working and you're not making any money and your friends are out there making money and doing things and looking successful, and here you are and all you have is the thing you love and some credit card debt. And to me, sustainability means finding that thing that goes beyond making money and finding the thing that really makes you happy to be living a life that is not normal. That's a hard thing to find. Yeah, it really is. And I worked at a baby clothes factory for a while, and a luggage factory, and a landfill, and an MRI screening facility. And I would work for a week, and I would work from 8 till 4 in the afternoon, and then I would drive up to Boston. I'd play an open mic, and I'd drive back. I did this for several years, just while I was trying to get started, and I didn't know what else to do, you know. And times were really, really rough and hard, and I don't think that I would be doing this now unless I did what I love, which is write song and try and do that. So what I'm saying is that I'm not doing it for anybody else, you know. I'm doing it for me, and I love writing. I find that anybody who finds something in my songs or in other people's songs, if they find something that they can relate to, then that makes me happy. That makes me really happy. But as soon as I start trying to write for other people, that's when I'm just not happy anymore. And you know, you can listen to the radio and you can hear songs that are made for other people, just made so that you'll like them. I'm not saying that's bad, but you know, I mean, more power to it. But is that what sustains you? Is giving somebody else exactly what they want what sustains you? So I guess the very simplest thing that I could say is that it makes me happy, and I love to do it, and I'm lucky enough to be able to do it, and thanks a lot for listening, you know.
All right, we can take some questions now, and we're looking for questions that relate to songwriting process, their vocation, and so forth. We're not looking for fan kind of questions.
The first question asked was where Josh Ritter and John Francis find inspiration for their songs.
I think that kind of the responsibility is to always have something around where you can write something down. And for me, the inspiration could come from anywhere, and I think that's the real, it's not the like inspiration itself, it's just knowing that wherever you go, something could happen, and you might be able to write it down, whether it's a picture of a mummy, or like a cat, or your hairband, or anything. It could be anything, you know, and the great thing is that you can just find those things and pour them into a big jug, and it fills up, and then the little bit that runs over is a song, hopefully. But I find definitely, though, I think, going back to the neuroscience, that I find that I have to run every day. That's my one thing that keeps me writing, is running. And it's weird. I don't know exactly why, but it makes me feel good. And it definitely, at a point in my life when I felt like I was blocked, I started running. It was like a Forrest Gump thing, you know? And I just, that helps me, yeah.
How I conceive of a song is I kind of picture it first, like a short film in my mind, and then I try to just exhaust the subject that I'm trying to write about. So anything, I won't censor anything. It's just anything that comes to my mind, I'll fill up a couple pages with it, images, and then, you know, it's brainstorming. So a lot of it's very non-linear, and then I take a look at that whole thing, and the song might start to appear. And then if it doesn't appear, then I just walk away from it. And it might come back, might not. But then every once in a long while, a song will just kind of show up and knock on the door. And if I'm ready to let it in. I like what Josh said. It's like a lot of it just has to do with putting yourself in a position where you can be inspired. You know, let's say there's a song that wants to get downloaded into your life. A lot of what I do is try to be ready for songs to walk into my life. And then when that happens, sometimes it's just like, all right, here it is. It's there in 3 minutes, and then it's a companion forever at that point, you know?
Next, the artists were asked whether the lyrics always come first for a new song, or if sometimes the music comes first. That led into a discussion of what the most frustrating part of being a songwriter can be.
Well, you know what, lately I've been just kind of like making noises, like just playing my guitar and making noises, and then if they sound like words, then sometimes I start there too. I mean, there's really no formula for it. If I'm doing something a certain way for a while, then I'll change it up, maybe like pick up a different guitar, or pick up a banjo or something, or a piano.
Yeah, I'd say the same thing. It's as soon as it gets one way, then you tend to start to write that way all the time, and it gets boring after a little while. I'm not sure why that is, but it you just kind of get bored. I mean, I do, so I change it up. But also, you know, there's something to be said for not saying anything if you don't have anything to say at the time. Like, writer's block, I don't think is necessarily all that bad. It just means you don't have much at that moment. I don't know. You're in college, so you have to write. But when the time comes and you don't have to, then that's the time when you either really love to do it and you do it, or you don't. And I think that's great, you know. I guess I've been writing a lot for about 10 years, and I find that I go through stretches where I'm writing a lot, and then there's times when I'm on the road where I'm not writing as much. But usually when I go into a period of time, it takes me about 5 days of really working hard on something, and nothing sounds right, you know? Everything is just, it's terrible, it's all been done before, you know? Everything you say is just the stupidest thing that has ever been said. Those 5 days are really hard, and I always think, man, of course this is not going to last forever. I know it. It's going to happen. I'm going to write. But those 5 days, it always feels like I'm never going to write again, and then it always seems to come on, and I don't know why. But those 5 days are really bad because, you know, you don't like people, and you drink way too much coffee. I also find that it's really frustrating trying to get out from underneath your own shadow and trying to do stuff that you feel like is new all the time. Your own self-editor can be your own best friend or worst enemy. I guess that's something everybody deals with when they write.
I have a question for you, Josh. Do you know that, I feel like this is like that Saturday Night Live skit with Chris Farley. I was just about to say, do you know that song of yours called, no, I forget the title of it. The one about the two lovers in the bomb shelter. And, oh, The Temptation of Adam. Could you talk to us about that song, how you, or at least talk to me about it?
Temptation of Adam is a song about a man and a woman who have been put in a missile shelter together, or a missile silo, and they're supposed to kind of hang out there and press the button when it's time, if they need to. And during the process of being locked in this kind of environment, they kind of fall in love. And it's a love story about whether you would choose to freeze time to have a moment be perfect. Kind of like I was thinking of the Garden of Eden, that, you know, sometimes love as we think about it can only exist in this perfect environment, this perfect type of love where everything is taken care of, the air is clean, and there's nothing else to bother you. And how that doesn't always work.
If this was the Cold War, we could keep each other warm. I said on the first occasion that I met Marie, we were crawling through the hatch that was the missile silo door, and I don't think that she really thought that much of me. Oh, Marie. Don't think that she really thought that much of me. I never had to learn to love her like I learned to love the bomb. She just came along and started to ignore me. But as we waited for the big one, I started singing her my songs, and I think she started feeling something for me. passed the time with crosswords that she thought to bring inside. What five letters spell apocalypse, she asked me. I won her over singing W-W-I-I-I. Oh, she smiled and we both knew that she'd misjudged me. Oh, Marie, it was so easy to fall in love with you. It felt almost like a home of sorts or something. You would keep the warhead missile silo good as new, and I'd watch you with my thumb above the button. Then one night you found me in my army issue cot, and you told me of your flash of inspiration. You said fusion was the broken heart that's lonely's only thought, and on that long you drove me wild with your equation. Oh, Marie, do you remember all the time we used to take? We'd make our love and then ransack the rations. And I think about your leaving now, the avalanche cascades. My eyes get washed away, chain reactions. Places where you thought that love would be found. But I would only need one pin to show where my love's at, in a top secret location 300 feet under the ground. So we could hold each other close. We'd stay up every night, looking up into the dark like it's the night sky. Pretend this giant missile is an old oak tree instead, and we'd carve our name in heart into the warhead. Oh, Marie, there's something tells me things just won't work out above, that our love would live a half-life on the surface. So at night while you are sleeping, I hold you closer just because. As our time grows short, I get a little nervous. So I think about the big one, W-W-I-I-I. Would we ever really care if the world had ended? You could hold me here forever, like you're holding me tonight. I think about that great big button, and I'm tempted.
After Josh played The Temptation of Adam, a student asked whether songwriters see a darker side of the world and how they deal with that.
I think that everybody's the same. I don't believe in anybody being a high priest of anything, because it's just not useful to writing. It's better to be a canary in the coal mine. I would find it more of a comforting role to feel like you reflect society rather than that you are any kind of commentator on society. When you listen to a musician talk about politics, you get an idea of how far from useful talking about the world can be when it's expressed in a way by a poet outside of the rhyme. I find that it's way better just to be a poet and to try and reflect what you see going on rather than to commentate on it or moralize about it. You know?
One thing that really gives me a lot of comfort is this. I think talking about how we deal with the darkness that we see, or talking about the things that bring us joy as well, in this kind of environment, like having people who are close to you who kind of have a similar path. So I think that's really important. So English majors, stick together.
The next question about writing addressed whether Josh and John see themselves as a vessel or if writing a song is mostly their own effort.
Well, I definitely believe in this idea of the muse. You know, especially if we're talking about this inspiration. You know, that moment where you have an epiphany, that can be like an invitation to write a song, or it can be a personal revelation or what have you. But yeah, I think what Josh was saying earlier, putting yourself in a position, I think it's a discipline to put yourself in a position where you can entertain the muses, whatever they may be.
After John answered that question, an English major mentioned how constructive criticism can be about her poetry. She wondered how Josh and John solicit honest feedback and what they do as a songwriter when there are no professors to critique their work.
I actually convinced my parents not to disown me by telling them I would spend 4 years on my music, and it would be like graduate school. So that's how I did it. But this is where I think it gets complicated in a certain way. There's no tenure track. There's no idea of what's going to come down the line. If you love what you do, you'll find a way to do it. And if you love what you do, you'll have the confidence to do it. Because that's all that there really is your own confidence to do something. My own personal idea about songwriting, about music, is that nobody can tell me what I want to write, and they can't tell me how to write it better. There's things that I can do and I can push myself, but it's my own voice in the end. And that being said, I've learned a lot from watching other people, not just their songs, but also, like, how do they live their life? Like, how does somebody like Bruce Springsteen continue to create when he's 60 and continue to go out on the road and tour? What is it that drives him? How does he keep a family together? You know, how does he have a family? How does he treat his children well? How does he do that and also do what he does? Find somebody else whose life hasn't been that way. Find out why. I mean, there's people that we look at through, and they lead by example, one way or the other. And I guess that's where I feel like I can really learn from my heroes, or from other people. Is just how are they gonna choose to live their life? And I would say that a lot of times those aren't musicians. They're just other people who seem to be doing something that makes them happy.
Josh went on to talk about the legacy he would like to leave.
In 30 years, I'll hopefully have kids through college. In the end, you're remembered by the hole that's left. And I feel like there's one thing that learning about music has given me the comfort in, is that there are thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people who sing songs who will never be remembered. We all do, and we all make small contributions to our lives and other people's lives that will never be remembered or memorialized. And I've always thought that it was the people with the biggest statues that maybe were. They saved all their songs for the end. I would rather be known for having a good family and having a good a life like that. That's the easiest thing to say, but the hardest thing to do. Going out and writing songs and trying to get everybody to love you is fairly cut and dry, but trying to, like, have a family and a good marriage, that's a lot harder, I think. Yeah.
The two artists were asked how it feels when other people interpret their songs.
I like hearing different interpretations. My dad just started his own rock and roll band. I sent him MP3s of the new record, and so he's been calling me with his interpretations of some of these new songs. And he's reading way too far into it, like, which may or may not run in the family, I'm not sure. But, I get a kick out of it. An impulse or a tendency that I notice that does bother me a little bit, not necessarily with my own songs, but when I see people doing it with other people's songs, is making the song over into our own image. And everyone does that, you know, and to a certain extent that's what I'd like people to do when they listen to my songs. But not to the point of Christianizing a love song where now all of a sudden it's like, you know, this song is really about Jesus and he's my boyfriend. And I know that sounds kind of crass, but maybe we don't need to speak for our songwriters.
I think Leonard Cohen said something really awesome. He said, when you say a poem, say it and get out of the way. I can't say that is a blanket rule, but I do think that I don't think that it's very interesting to sit at your desk all day and write poems. It's not the most glamorous life that way, you know. Reading out of my diary would be pretty boring, you know what I mean? And I don't think that it's important to tell people about your own private life. I mean, it seems to narrow it down. It seems to narrow down the focus, you know, when you could write about anything in the world, you know. Take Flannery O'Connor, for instance. If she wrote about her own life, that way it'd be a very circumscribed, very small thing, but she wrote about everything. Or Shakespeare. Think of all the tendency to burrow in and look at something that Shakespeare did and say, wow, he got everything. You know, he invented the human being when he invented Hamlet. It's way more fun just to, like, sing a song, try and make it as relatable as possible, rather than singing just about you, who you know yourself better than anybody else. Yeah.
Sure.
Joshua was asked to talk about the first track off of his new album, entitled To the Dogs or Whoever.
But the idea for this song was that I wanted to get as many lyrics in as possible. And I was thinking about, like, as many fictional characters or folk characters, all these people, basically action figures that I could throw together into a song and kind of crash them into each other. Casey Jones, the runaway train engineer, and Casey at the bat, who's so proud that he doesn't swing at any of the balls that go by him, and Joan of Arc. I was thinking a lot about these different characters that hear voices in their heads telling them to do certain things, and that when a prophet goes out into the marketplace, he sings to the dogs or whoever. It's whoever's going to listen. Plus, it was a really fun song. It's like just blowing stuff up over and over again. I really enjoy that. Yeah.
Next, a student asked if there are certain themes that Josh Ritter and John Francis find themselves returning to in their music.
I'd say definitely faith, whatever that is to me, and I'm not sure from day to day. I feel like that's a really big deal, and because it is, it's a big deal of how we live our lives. I was raised pretty strictly in a Lutheran tradition, and when I got to school, I found that there was a lot of questions that I couldn't answer, or that I felt like I wasn't allowed to ask. And that was a big moment. I ran up against a wall, just up against a brick wall, and I don't want to play down how serious that was. It was fundamental that I felt like I couldn't ask questions, and I was being asked by my own self to write and to read and to ask questions, and then to feel this tremendous guilt that I couldn't create or I would have these problems. Maybe you have had this problem, maybe you haven't. So I got really mad, and I'm still mad about that stuff. I'm still mad that I think that there's part of me that holds back when I have something to say, or if I have to ask a question, or I can't shake my fist at God, or even question if God's there. If you're a thinking, breathing human being, that should be your right to do that, and to have those real dark moments, so that you can pick them up and look at them and throw them aside, and then go on and do what you have to do every day to, like, sustain your life, as we talked about. And I also feel like I just don't hear much faith in songs right now. And I feel like just being able to talk about it in whatever way, not by preaching and not by saying what I myself believe, but in talking about the fear of the absence of God. Yeah.
Lately I've been writing true stories. Sometime soon I want to make a record of just all nonfiction. I write about a lot of people who I meet, especially the past 6 years I've been living in Philadelphia, running into a lot of people who are just, they have nothing. And somehow they give me a lot. In their having nothing, they've given me a lot. So I'd like to sing a song about one of these people.
Driving down that back road, a drunk driver took their last. Ten long years I dreamed of them, and to this day I grieve her. Oh, brother, won't you be your brother's keeper? Methamphetamines and liquor couldn't take away this pain. So I resolved to find the killer and put a bullet in his brain. I killed men in Vietnam. Just close your eyes and squeeze the trigger. Oh, brother, won't you be your brother? And I knew just where he was living when he paroled from states. Melinda, this one is for you. I'll make him suffer your same fate. I took aim at his face and I watched that poor man quiver. Oh, brother, won't you be your brother's keeper? Now, I've never been Christian man on account of what I've seen. But I swear by my daughter's grave, a great white light came down between. And I laid my pistol to the ground. Since then, I'm a believer. Oh, brother, won't you be brother's keeper? So, mister, could you spare a blanket? I'm gonna sleep in the park. Could I trouble you for $5 for a meal at the mini-mart? First, let me tell you about Melinda. Tonight, more than ever, I need her. Oh, brother, won't you be brother's keeper? Oh, brother, won't you be brother's keeper? My brother, won't you be brother's?
A question was raised about the times when Josh and John feel that they can't write, and whether they feel pressure from outside forces to write.
Sometimes you have to walk away, sometimes you have to go and just do something else, but really, just knowing that eventually it's going to happen. You know, I've had ideas in my head or on paper that I've had for 5 or 6 years that just have gone nowhere, but I know they'll eventually something's going to happen. Or maybe they'll just get eaten up by other songs. Nothing's really wasted. All that energy you put in, the conservation of energy, it's going to go somewhere. It's going to come back to you somehow. And it's never wasted, even though at the end of the day, sometimes it feels like it is. It's just, I just don't think it is. Yeah. Eventually something will happen.
I feel a lot of pressure to write songs, but it's pressure that the songs themselves kind of exert. Yeah, I'm kind of always aware of the songs that are like kind of closest to the surface, closest to being born. Yeah, and there's some pressure there, but I don't feel pressure from anybody else.
I think I do, yeah. I definitely feel pressure. Partially, it's because it gets you that way. You do something, and it happens, and you get it's received well, and you get, like, a thing in the newspaper, and you sell records, and you get a check, and then you think, well, now what? Now what do I do? Like, I want to do that. And then people come around, and they start telling you that's what is supposed to happen. The next one's going to be bigger. It happens to everybody. Coldplay, those guys, talk about pressure. They believed that they were having to, you know, make a record that was bigger than U2 and bigger than the Beatles. And Hemingway, he calls it the movable feast. He calls the people that come in and tell you those sorts of things, he calls them the pilot fish. And you got to watch out for those pilot fish, because when they show up, that's when the hangers-on come and start telling you things. That even though you know that, there is a lot of pressure, because go out on tour and you have a band to support and you've got people to feed and you've got to make this stuff happen. There's been times I've gone into the studio and I thought, well, you know, I don't know what I've got to say. You know, I've got to figure this out and it's going to take some time, and I have had some serious moments, but thankfully it's all worked out for the best. But I definitely feel pressure sometimes, but it's good. It works out, you know.
A student musician asked how Josh and John keep going out there to do what they love when there's no job application for it.
And I feel like even these days it's rough. It's rough. But it can be done, you know? It can be done. And the fact is that the good things come along when you need them. They really do. They come along. If you're working hard, stuff will come along for you. I really believe that. It's always worked out that way for me, that I thought I needed something. And I didn't actually need it until I really did, and that's when it came along. But temp work, man, that, as much as it sucks, it can save you in a bind. I have a friend who's a poet. He says that if he had all the time in the world to sit around and write poems, he wouldn't be able to. He has to sneak them in. He's a big poet, and sometimes he goes off and works little jobs just to fill up his schedule so that he has to write on his off time. But if you love what you do, like, don't worry about it. You'll figure it out.
The final question was about the history of songwriting and whether Josh and John attempt to break from a tradition or to continue it.
I think both. I think it's important for me to find my voice, to find my narrative voice, and that can change from song to song and from record to record. It's important to find what that particular song is asking. That sounds really esoteric, but that's the best I can say. But as far as literary traditions and musical traditions, especially, I think it's amazing that Josh went to Scotland and kind of immersed himself in that archive. And I think across the board, songwriters who I really resonate with and have a lot of respect for are songwriters who've done their homework. You know, they've done their homework because they love it. It's their sustenance. I think if you throw yourself into a deep reflection and a deep study on American music history, it's like learning a language, really, you know.
I think there's three things that all writing is about. It's about love, God, and war. There's all sorts of gradations in between those things, but in terms of topics, there's no original ones out there. All you can bring to it is your own voice, I think that's the important thing. In terms of originality and what's been done before, that's I always have to remind myself that. Hope you guys had a good time. This is cool, all right?
This has been a special installment of Listen Up, a Messiah College podcast. The Songwriting as Poetry lecture was offered on March 27th on Messiah's campus. This installment of Listen Up was produced by Katie Manzullo. For more information or to listen to past episodes, please visit the Listen Up website at blogs.messiah.edu/listenup.